Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And as it's the 3 o'clock hour, not yet five, we are doing Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. And it's always a pleasure to be joined by incredibly smart women who have so much to say on these super important topics. This week, we've been talking about global power and money, and how wealth influences and controls not just institutions in the United States, but global institutions and our global economic system. We've heard from Oxfam's Nabil Ahmed about how concentrated wealth has really become the standard across the world, and how many corporations are owned by billionaires, and how global institutions are in many ways being manipulated and controlled by billionaires to serve their own interests. And we talked yesterday with Bob Lord and Scott Ellis about how here, the institution of the Supreme Court of the United States is being, by many accounts, influenced, perhaps at best and at worst, controlled by the billionaire class. And today, I'm so happy to be joined by one of the world's foremost experts on international economics and globalization, something that I, as an economist, have always been interested in, and certainly as a lawyer and having worked abroad, has been an interest close to my heart. We're going to talk about what all of this means in a global geopolitical context. While that sounds obtuse, it's really not, and it has very, very concrete impacts on the quality of life, not just for the middle class and working people in this country, but across the world. Her name is Jyoti Ghosh. She taught economics at Nehru University in New Delhi. She's currently an econ professor at UMass Amherst. And in 2021, the United Nations named her to be on the High-Level Advisory Board on Economic and Social Affairs. And as a fellow nerd, I will say this, one of the most impressive things on your resume is that you are the executive secretary of International Development Economics Associates, an international network of heterodox development economists. I know those are, that is an elite group, if I can say so. Welcome, Jyoti. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you, Maggie. It's a real pleasure.
You have spent basically your entire life studying exactly how businesses and billionaires accumulate and expand market power and then use it to consolidate within industries, whether vertically or horizontally, and use that consolidated power to influence politics. Again, how does that play out both here in the United States and around the world? And what results from this pattern of again, accelerating wealth, consolidation, and the exercise of political power as a result?
You know, Maggie, I think in the US, you're already seeing the results. You're seeing how most ordinary people feel more insecure, more fragile, more resentful, and how they then tend to blame it on others who are like them, really. Yes. On migrant workers or on minorities. Exactly that same thing is playing out in the rest of the world as well. And it's, in fact, it's actually worse. Because in the US, it plays out in terms of more insecurity, more unhappiness, more frustration and resentment. Maybe you don't get a job. Maybe you don't get the kind of job you would like. Maybe you can't make ends meet exactly as you used to. But in many parts of the world, we are talking about absolute hunger. We're talking about people who are reduced to starvation because of these big processes that are controlled essentially by very large multinational corporations and very rich people, who, as you mentioned, can also influence policies.
So critical. And we're going to dive into some of those particular results that we see in the developing world. But extreme inequality isn't just a fairness issue. It can actually drag down entire economies, developing economies, of course, more susceptible. And by extension, part of what you study, Jyoti, is that when economies start to get dragged down and you see this incredible wealth concentration, the likelihood of dictatorships, of authoritarian regimes, of course, goes up. Explain this interaction, how this destabilization results from this extreme inequality.
So extreme inequality has all kinds of manifestations. As I said, it leads to more and more people feeling unsettled, insecure, unhappy, and of course worried about their basic material life and existence. But it also creates a power group that can continue to manipulate markets, that can affect government regulations and laws and policies in their favor, that can change fiscal policies, taxation policies, spending policies in their favor, and basically make it worse and worse. And so it's not a surprise that in that whole period, the last 10 years, everybody has been talking much more about inequality, and it's been getting worse every time. Every year it is worse than the previous year, because all of these powerful people are economically powerful, so they can influence not just the politics, but the policies that will keep them entrenched in power. That means that as insecurities among ordinary people rise, they're looking for some solution. And so you tend to go for strong men, really. And I have to say they're mostly men, strong men who declare that, you know, we can change all of this for you. We understand your frustration. They will present themselves as outsiders when they're essentially insider, and they're totally in with the crony large capitalists, but they will present themselves in a way that ordinary people just fall for. And we're seeing this across the world, of course, in the US, but in so many other countries.
Yeah, there is a cycle of exploitation that you seem to describe and that we're seeing replicated, again, at different levels of consequence to working people and frankly, poor folks. But the cycle of exploitation that really relies and then promotes from those that control economic power at a vast scale, having this influence on policies and politics and institutions. And many of these leaders that are cropping up, not just in the United States, but as you say, Jyoti, across the world, really—
In my own country, yes, in India.
Yes. They appeal to this nativist, isolationist sentiment because people are feeling, correctly so, their intuition is telling them, I'm being exploited. Yeah. This is not fair. Yeah. Can you give us a couple of examples, a couple of industries where this shows up very concretely?
Well, you don't have to look very far back. Just look in the last 3 years at what has happened to global food prices and the associated hunger. So I don't know how many people listening know about the Sustainable Development Goals, which are these big goals that the whole international community, the UN, agreed on in 2015. One of them, the first one, was supposed to be the easiest one, which is get rid of hunger. And it's kind of obvious, right? There is enough food to feed the whole planet and more. We really don't have to have hungry people. Eliminate hunger. Everybody thought this is the easy one. We've got worse. It's actually increased. The number of hungry people has gone up by more than 150 million since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that need not have happened. That is essentially a result of exactly the processes that we were talking about. So what happened exactly? First, you had this pandemic, and that played out very unequally between rich and poor countries. Because the rich countries, yes, things closed down and you had to stop doing things. But, you know, there was a lot of social protection. In the US, everybody got checks in the mail. In many other countries, there was lots more public spending to balance out the fact that you couldn't go out and earn your living. In most poor and low middle and middle income countries, you didn't get that. You didn't get anything to compensate for your inability to earn your own livelihood. And so you got really lots of people facing extreme hunger in that situation because governments either could not or would not provide the minimum social protection you need to do. Okay, so you have the pandemic. Maybe after that there will be recovery, you think? No, because after that, what do we get? We get the Ukraine war, right? So Russia first threatens to and then does invade Ukraine. And remember, Russia is a big wheat exporter. So is Ukraine, a big wheat exporter. So everyone said, oh my God, now the wheat market will be affected. And true, the global wheat prices shoot up. They like double in 6 months, okay? In fact, all food prices go up. And everyone says, oh, it's because of the war, and it's because these two big countries that are exporting wheat can't export it anymore. That's not true. It turns out global supply was not affected. Global supply was the same. In fact, it increased over that period. So what on earth was going on? It was big agribusinesses. There are four big agribusinesses that control 80% of the global food market, food grain market, okay? And if you add a fifth smaller one, it's 90%, okay? They control this market and they just raise their prices. And nobody questioned it because they said, oh, sure, it's because of the war. The media plays a big role in this as well, right? The media kept telling us that, oh, yeah, Russia's an exporter, Ukraine's an exporter, so it's all really terrible about grain exports. So they were allowed to dramatically increase prices, which affects not just people in the US and in Europe, but it really affects people in poor countries, okay? Now, remember, in addition to that, you have the agribusinesses making profits, but you also have these financial companies speculating in commodity futures markets. So you got a combination, like a really big group getting together to raise these prices.
We're going to have to take a couple messages, but there are these intersections between the financial industry and some of what happens with currencies, as well as these massive multinational corporations that control our food supply. We double down on that in the United States. We had egg manufacturers and other manufacturers artificially reducing supply to keep these prices artificially inflated. Jyoti, I have a name for it. I call it pandemic profiteering. There was no reason to keep the prices that high, and yet we stayed there. Folks, my very special guest, an international expert on economics and globalism, her name is Jyoti Ghosh. She is currently a professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. She's taught in New Delhi, and she has been named in the past by the United Nations in 2021 to the High-Level Advisory Board on Economic and Social Affairs. We're going to be back with more with Jyoti. Don't go anywhere, because it touches every industry that probably matters to your family's bottom line. It is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
The Patriotic Millionaires also purchase advertising time on various civic media stations throughout Wisconsin.